one thing I've learned is some of the people who've run the most amazing times and made the Olympic trials and done all these things have come off cycles that did not go well, or they were injured, built, you know, coming into it, but they had had a great cycle the month, you know, the ones leading up to it, the couple leading into that particular one. And they were able to just kind of take the pressure off themselves a little bit and not be so, oh my God, I have to do this, you know, and all of a sudden the result actually came because they weren't maybe expecting it. They took some pressure off themselves and almost like they allowed their body to do what it was like truly capable of without the mind getting in the way.
Welcome to, or welcome back to, A Runner's Life podcast. You were just listening to a snippet of the conversation with today's guest, Ron Romaro. So we're talking pre-pandemic, when we could travel and we could do things more freely. When I was doing the World Marathon Majors, beyond running, you go to see new places, new cities, new cultures, and you get to experience it with some amazing people that bring so much energy. And Ron is just one of those people that brings so much energy into your life, really, and I'm really grateful to have him as a friend. And it's so crazy to think back in 2019 is when, you know, the last of the World Marathon Majors were happening. So we ran Berlin together 2019, and that was incredible. We got to catch up there, and then also we got to catch up in the New York City Marathon. And I was on his podcast talking about the experience that I had there and getting so close to sub 3, and he gave me some words of wisdom, and yeah, it was definitely insightful to help me then break it in the following year. So looking forward to catching up with Ron in the next World Marathon Major. But I just got the opportunity to speak to him about things that I want to ask him about. You know, Ron is an accomplished athlete and he's got such drive, and I really got to dive into his mindset, what he was like, you know, in his early days as a runner, the lessons that he's learned into today, and talking about one of his more recent challenges, which we'll get into. But Ron is one of the good ones, and yeah, I'm really grateful to know him, and I'm grateful that we get the opportunity to share this conversation with you. Before I get into the conversation, I just want to shout out to my Patreons. Thank you for your support. It basically allows me to get these podcasts out, edited, and I've got some exciting projects that I'm looking at doing in the future in terms of just getting outside and just getting the podcast on the road. So look forward to listening to that. You might have heard a little snippet actually with some of the work that I did with my fellow podcaster Danny Easton, and we did a recent podcast just talking about Run Cruise and where that's sort of going. And it was a really good conversation with the guests that joined us. And as always, I appreciate everyone's support that listens to the show, shouts out the show, puts it on their social media platforms. It really does mean a lot to me. And every time you leave a rating, it really does help the show. Finally, I want to shout out my supporter for the show, Tracksmith. So following the Olympic trials and then moving into the Olympics, I was looking at some of the content, and there was this particular cap that I saw in the track and field section that I was like, I've got to get that hat. And they finally just released it, the track and field cap. So full disclosure, bought it with my own money, and it's arrived today, and I'm so chuffed that it's arrived. Definitely check it out. Also, if you're looking at running the Marathon Majors, and or you're thinking about running them in the future, sign up to the 100 Days newsletter, because it gives you lots of useful information from running that race from mile zero all the way to 26.2 miles. Plus, it gives you tips for things to do, places to see, places to run, places to eat and drink. So definitely check it out. I'm presenting the London edition. But with that being said, let's head to the conversation with Ron. Hi, Ron. Welcome back to A Runner's Life podcast. How are you?
Doing great, my brother. How are you, man? It's been too long.
It has. It's been a long time, and we've had a great conversation before we start recording, and I was just like, look, I need to start hitting this record button, otherwise all this gold is going to be lost in the ether. So it's always a pleasure talking to you, but I've never actually asked you this question before, actually. So starting off, the podcast is called A Runner's Life. What does a runner's life mean to you?
A runner's life. Well, first off, thank you for having me back on. Always enjoy our chats, our conversations, even if we are across the pond from each other and doing this locally. I'm sorry, not locally. We both prefer IRL in real life. A runner's life to me, something we talked a little bit about before coming on the air. It's been almost 4 months for me, 3.5 months since I can run. And I've never had a major injury in 30 years. And you were sharing a story with me. I believe you said it was your grandmother was mentioning to your wife just how much running is a part of your life and part of who you are as a person. I think people have this idea that it's all about the medals. It's all about, you know, winning a 6-star medal or placing at the highest in your age group or running that next PR at a certain distance. But for me, what I've certainly learned for the first time, and it was a hard lesson to learn, but I kind of think I already knew it anyway. For 30 years of running and training and being so serious about running, I miss running so much. It's just part of my life. It feeds my soul, and it's where I get so many things done that make my life complete. You know, it's where I solve business problems or think creatively. It's where I do editing of our podcast, my show, just like you have your show. I'll listen to the show. I'll go through it and try to mine it for the best audio clip or think about what I'm going to write on the post. If there's a family issue at home, somebody's sick or not well, or just at the front end of the pandemic, you know, my thoughts were so much on healthcare workers. Like, what could I do? I felt paralyzed. Like, is there something I could do? Like going out, that simple act of lacing up your shoes and getting out the door and going on a run is where all of those things, you know, come to the surface for me and make my life like infinitely better and make me a better person. So that's what a runner's life is to me.
There's so much in that. And I just want to step back and think about, you know, what it means to you. And do you know, when we have conversations with our friends and things like that, where they say, why do you run? And I'm not saying that you do this, but sometimes we can do this. We give the answer that we feel that they want to hear, or we try to project an image of ourselves. I'm not saying that you're doing that. The other day, my daughter asked me, she said, Daddy, why do you run? And I had to really strip away why I run. I had to break down into how it made me feel. And I had to relate it to something that she enjoys doing, rather than just focusing on, you know, the external stuff, which comes probably second, third, fourth down the line. It's not the first thing that you think of while you run. So imagine your 3-year-old self, imagine your son who's 3, and he comes up to you and goes, Dad, why do you run? What would you say to him?
Great question. Man, I was so equipped to answer those things when my son was 3. And now he's a grown man, Marcus, at 23. And he's off living in Vermont and going on hikes with his beautiful girlfriend. And they're living the life. I just think kids just love fun and they love play. They love taking it. We took dish towels as kids and we pretended we were Superman or Batman and Robin or some other superhero and just ran around like maniacs all day. That's all we cared about. We didn't really care about much else. Hide and seek, games, run. Running was a part of every single thing I ever did when I was a kid. It's what I enjoyed doing. Racing kids down the street, going to get milk for my mom at the supermarket, which was, you know, I'm saying supermarket. It was like a neighborhood deli, a place where you could get, you know, milk and bread and rolls and cold cuts or whatnot. And my mom would say, who wants to go to the store? And I was raising the hand. I'll go. And then she would time me. I would just like run as fast as I could. My lungs were like bursting open. So I don't know. For me, I would just say, you know, because it's fun, because it's running's an adventure. And every time you get out there, it's something different. You never know what's going to happen out there once you leave your door.
It's so true that we go from one side of being the fun, the adventure. And then, because we both ran Boston 2018, and you go to that. And I don't know for you, that race is definitely one of the highlights for me, because I think there's something in, you've got the fun side of running, you know, what you get from it. But then it's also going to a place that you don't often go to in, you know, your day-to-day life, and coming out of it and sort of seeing a different side of yourself revealed, that, you know, clearly that you sometimes forget that's there. And I'm sort of thinking, like, we can go from that sort of side, the fun side, to the real challenging side as well. And it's so hard to almost connect those dots sometimes in a rational conversation.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great real world example. So that race will be iconic and live forever because of the conditions. And also, you know, how many of us got treated for hypothermia. I can raise my hand on that. And I don't know, I think it was like a few thousand actually got treated for hypothermia. And we all know the pros are amazing and the amount of work they put in. And, you know, they're not only earning like huge money like Hollywood actors or, you know, NBA athletes. And they work their ass off. They train so many miles. They grind so hard. They have to work on the nutrition. It's a tough way to make a living, even for an elite athlete. And we're just out there, you know, just doing it to get our medal, you know, to finish Boston or to finish London. And you do find out a lot about yourself on days like that. You find out a lot more about yourself than you ever really thought that you would, because your every part of your psyche gets tested, your physical gets tested, your will gets tested, and you just don't know how you're going to respond until you're in that situation. And, you know, we were lucky enough to come through it. And I feel worse for friends of mine who couldn't, you know, who got pulled off the course and maybe couldn't finish, but wanted to finish, but they just, they were too far back when they started struggling with the weather or the cold. And they just, they couldn't push through and make it. So my heart bleeds for them, because it's one of those days that, you know, we'll always be able to, you know, have as a memory for something that we came through and made us stronger.
I think that's such a great point, because yeah, sometimes you can forget the other side, and like you said, there were people that had the will, equal will, but the bodies were just not allowing it to happen. And sometimes it's hard in the moment, and then even hard afterwards to kind of process that.
Yeah, I think there's so much that goes on a day like that, right? And what we always worry about in a marathon, and we have to, because we all learn at one point or another, you know, the word bonking was probably made more famous for marathoning than any other thing in the world. You know, I don't think anybody thinks of it other than like in marathon running or maybe an Ironman triathlete, maybe, you know, like it's certainly an endurance sport where if you don't get your fueling right, it's going to have a negative impact. It's going to have a bad impact. And I think that that probably caused more issues that day than anyone is aware of. You know, everybody thinks it's what clothing choice they made or what did they have on, you know, was it just the cold got to them and that's why they got hypothermic. I know personally that my hands froze so badly and, you know, my hat blew off my head, my gloves, I couldn't open my gels. I just couldn't open them, you know, between trying to tear them with my teeth, using my fingers, I just couldn't open them. And I probably would have been a lot better served to just have stopped, you know, at the side of the road somewhere and just like opened one, you know, eaten the gel and gotten some more fuel in, because when it's pouring rain and the wind's blowing 35 miles an hour in your face, as you know, and you barely can see, you know, these things make decision-making really hard. And I think probably most of the people out there that were really impacted by the cold was more probably from not having enough fuel in, and then their bodies just started to go the wrong way. And again, if they weren't far enough along and they ended up getting pulled into a medical tent, that's a tough deal. You know, they probably were just told, nope, you can't go back out there. And, you know, that's a rough one for sure.
It is. And when I go back to a race and I think about the kind of the mindset before and afterwards, I've spoken about this before, kind of mentally thinking about the weather. And like, I'm human, so before I'm like, this is cold, you're freezing, you know, your shoes are soaked, your clothes are soaked. And I remember as soon as like across the start line, it was almost like something switched, and it was just like, get to the finish. And it was just like, I can't explain, it was just like being in this sort of trance until the end. And then when you cross the line, it's like someone turns the lights back on and you're like, oh my gosh, whatever. Was during it, it's still hard, don't get me wrong, but it's not, it didn't feel like, you know, there was a point to stop. But like you're saying, like there's points where I think my laces came undone, my hands feel like, you know, blocks of ice, you're trying to get your gels out, but there's something that still kind of pushes you forward. And I know what it was like for me, but for you, what was that conversation like when, you know, you've got the wind, the rain driving your face, and you're thinking, what rational person would think this is a good idea?
Yeah, I mean, there were many conversations. At some point, I think I was completely responsible because I like yelled up to the heavens, is this all you have? Come on, bring it, you know, at the top of my lungs. Because at one point, you know, it was being blown sideways and, you know, like my eyes are closing and, yeah, you know, just like, and then as it would abate a little bit, I was like, okay, come on, we got this. And then, you know, I'm earlier in the race, I was running through like ankle deep, you know, calf deep water because, you know, I'm an idiot. You know, I'm like, I turn into an 8-year-old kid at the drop of a hat. And, you know, it's just who I am, man. And I don't want that to change. You know, I might be 60 in age, but I'll always think of myself as a kid who likes to be tough and scrappy. So that serves me well on days like that. And, you know, when it got really bad for me, luckily I was about 22 miles in because I'd scaled Heartbreak. I'd come down past BC into Cleveland Circle. And that's where I remember like actually crashing into a few people. Like, and I mean, not like ramming them really hard, but just, you know, not intentionally, like bumping into some people, like, you know, kind of starting to have some problems with my vision, you know, starting to get dizzy. And I was like, oh my God, this is definitely not good. This is a problem. But, you know, again, you know, you talked about it, you just mentioned it. You know, it's almost like you're in a trance. You know, I basically said to myself, okay, I know every step of the way from here until I cross the line. And it's a couple of miles. It's like doing a cool down at home when I'm really exhausted after the hardest track workout. It's like basically doing a warm up before a race. You know, it's just something that I've done so many times. I just need to go on autopilot mode. I don't care if I'm weaving, as long as nobody notices it besides me, you know, nobody comes to take me off the course, I'll be okay. And, you know, just was thinking like going from like one stop sign to the next or one traffic light or, you know, just look at the next jersey in front of me, whatever color it was, if I could even see, because, you know, vision was certainly not something that was very good. Yeah. I don't know anybody that could see well, unless you had like windshield wipers on your glasses or something, you probably couldn't see, you know, more than a few feet in front of you.
Yeah. Well, the driving rain, it was just insane. And just listening to what you said there, it kind of reminds me of that saying, you know, that goes, you know, that running is nothing more than like a series of arguments between the part of your brain that wants to stop and the part of you that wants to keep going. So you obviously talked a little bit about that in Boston, but you've been running for over 30 years. And I mean, how do you kind of manage those conversations? I don't want to make it seem like an argument because it almost seems like it's almost like a negative thing. But how do you kind of, yeah, just sort of deal with those sort of thoughts during such a long time running?
I think the conversation's definitely changed over the years as I've learned a lot more about myself and I've learned what I'm capable of. And I think for the new runners out there, you know, you got to figure out what that conversation needs to be. Do you need to be hard on yourself? Do you need to like ease off? Do you need to give yourself permission to like let go of, you know, maybe like what your A goal was on a day like that and just realize, hey, this is a day of survival. This is just a day to finish. And I do think that experience helps you. And, you know, being around for 30 years gives you a lot of experience, you know, on the courses themselves, you know, what's in front of you. I'm sure if somebody had never run Boston before and was out there on that day, I don't want to think what that would have been like for them to turn right at the firehouse and like start to run up the Newton Hills and not even know what was in store for them. Whereas, you know, I know what's there. I know what those hills are like. And I know that once I crest the top of Heartbreak and I get up to Boston College, I know from there, come bombing down into Cleveland Circle, it's basically net downhill to, you know, basically flat. So that helps me manage, you know, the conversation. And I just break the race into smaller chunks at that point. And depending on the day, and that day, obviously it was survival, you know, just keep moving, just like you're talking about, stay moving one foot in front of the other, you know, you just keep going. And every step gets you closer to the finish line. Obviously in other races, the conversation's different. You know, am I trying to, you know, like in the year that I ran all six majors, was I trying to average 3:15, you know, like that's kind of where my average was after, I don't know, four races out of the six. So at that point, you know, when it started, I had no idea that that would be something important to me because I didn't know what I'd be able to do. You know, how could anyone know running that many that close together with that much travel, you know, how your body would hold up, especially at 58. But I think the mind is like the most powerful tool that we have in our arsenal. And the mental game, you know, you and I both are huge Goggins fans, you know, working on your mental, you know, game and your mindset and making your mind a powerful resource, learning how to use mantras that will work for you. Like, so for me, stay in the fight works. We know that. That's my sign off on my pod. For everybody else, it's something different. And you have to figure out words that are going to have power for you. It doesn't mean that you're going to use, you know, another pro's mantra. You're not going to use Des Linden's, or you're not going to use somebody else who you look up to as a runner. Those words have to resonate with you and mean something to you. And I know you've written them on your gel and done things like that, or gels, I'm sorry, you know, multiple gels, like different things that you say to yourself. And I think it's super cool. Other people write it, you know, on their arm sleeves, or, you know, on their arms, you know, or on their gloves. Whatever you do, you know, you got to have something out there that you can tap into when the race gets difficult, because the race will always get difficult, as we know.
That's so true. There's always a point where it kind of asks you the question and you have to respond back. You might not have the answer, but you have to, the perceived answer, but you have to have an answer to it. Otherwise, you just get rolled over.
Truth.
And I kind of just want to go back to your marathon PR. And I know we've spoken a little bit about mindset, but I'm just trying to think like how you're, I just want to focus on like the mental side, because obviously the physical side is important. We've spoken about the training that you've done, and I just want to focus more on the mental side. So how has your kind of mental game sort of changed from that PR to where you are today? And what did you kind of, what things did works for you? I'm probably just asking this question because I want to know it for myself.
So. I think it's a great, well, it's a great question to know for yourself.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's a great question to everyone who listens to your show, because it's incredible how perspective changes. And it's one of the things we talked about. I was going to come on right after doing the 60-mile run for Tommy Rives, which I'm sure we'll talk about later. And you wanted to do it later when I'd have some more perspective on it. And it was interesting because I kind of wanted to do it more closely to when I did the run, but I love the fact that some more time has passed, because yes, and even though it's only a few months, you do gain perspective. So in this case now, for my marathon PR, that would be 1996. So I was 36 years old or 35 years old, 240 in Chicago, ran 241 in the 100th Boston, and ran, I think, a dozen times between 240 and 246. So I had a lot of times that were spread in that group, or maybe 247 was the slowest of the 240 times. A lot in there, but couldn't get under, you know, the barrier, you know, that I was chasing, you know, for like a long time. And as far as mindset, you know, being perfectly honest, Marcus, I don't know that mindset was something that we were focusing on a lot back then, you know, at 35, 36 years old. Just think about it. It's so long ago. I mean, it's 24 years ago for me. And I don't even know that like sports psychologists that exist today that have such a role in athletics, in all sports, man. I don't care if you're talking about soccer, basketball, you name a sport, you know, any women's sport, any men's sport, sports psychology, and how we think about performance and goal setting and what we're going after and what we're going to achieve. So that's one big piece. And another big piece of it was like nutrition and fueling, which we all know now, you'd never run a race without knowing how many Morton gels you need to take, or how many goos you need to take, or maybe you don't take gels at all. Maybe you have a stomach that just doesn't do well with those, so you have to fuel in alternative ways. So for mindset, for me, I don't know how much of a role it really played, if I'm going to be 100% honest. I think that what played more of an important role is I knew that I was willing to do whatever it took to run the fastest times. I studied like a madman. I read, you know, Greg McMillan was doing his graduate research right then. McMillan Running Performance, terrific coach. Everybody uses his calculator. You know, they plug in a 5K time or a half marathon time to see what they think they're going to run for the marathon. He was doing his PhD research in college then to come up with those tables and the algorithms to predict all that stuff. And he was my coach and faxing me workouts. So I would think it was a lot more about, I just worked so hard and put so much mileage in and focused on that I was so strong. But I think if I had the mental component that I have today, or the mantras that I use today, or the mindset that I've learned over 30 years, I'm absolutely certain that I would have run, you know, significantly faster times, or at least a few minutes faster, maybe not significantly, you know, maybe 235, 236, something like that. So, you know, to recap that, it's a huge piece, but it was something I just didn't have much experience in back then. It was just more about what kind of workouts do I need to do? How many miles do I need to run? You know, how am I going to prepare for the course? you know, how many hills are there? You know, am I going to run marathon pace, you know, X number of miles in my long runs? So I was always doing very course specific work and just grinding a lot of miles and preparing myself. But on the mindset side, I wasn't anywhere near where I am today. And I wish if I was, you know, I'm sure I would have done better.
That's really interesting to hear, because like you said, the physical side is so important. Like you said, you do the work, but then there's the mental side. And like you hear today, some pros and, you know, sports psychologists and those sort of people saying it's important to do the stuff, you know, outside of the running. Obviously you can't just sit in your couch and just dream away to a PR. It's not going to happen. But I'm just trying to think, like, what specifically would you do potentially that's would add to what you would have done if you could go back to your, you know, 36-year-old self? You say, look, Ron, you need to do this alongside the running. Would it be like visualization? Would it be kind of just writing it on your mirror, like you hear Sarah Hall was writing, you know, that time on? What it looked like?
I think those things would have definitely helped. I think, you know, we're huge Goggins fans. I mean, yeah. Like we're like front row seat card carrying Goggins fans. I think if I had listened to his audiobook the way I did, like literally 15, 16 days in a row when I was doing crazy mileage, you know, getting ready for, you know, my 60-mile run, I think mindset is so important. It's equally important as all the work you've done building up in a cycle. And getting yourself physically ready to tackle whatever the race is going to throw at you. What does that course have? Is it London? Is it flat? Is it Chicago? Is it flat? Is it New York, where it's not only hilly, but you have all those bridges, and damn well, you know, those bridges beat the crap out of you. And yep. Then you get the final curveball running up Fifth Avenue before you get into the park to really give you that final like right uppercut, which cost you, you know, for breaking your first sub three. And, you know, obviously you smashed well under your next time around. So there's that physical component of like, what does the course offer? How do you prepare for it? And I mean the specific. So that's something I always share with people. What are you doing in your training to prepare for the actual course you're going to run? Are you running hard long runs on a flat course to prepare for Berlin? Or, you know, are you doing enough hill work and preparing to run fast late on hills to be ready for a course like Central Park that's taken a lot out of you? But I do think if I ever had the toolkit stuff that Goggins has offered me later in life as a runner at 60 and at 58 and 59, when I've done some really good things, I know that I could have performed better. If I had more nutrition information available to me, it would have certainly helped. But I think that's cool though. You should, when you look back on anything in life, man, I'm super proud of what I did. But no question, if I had developed mindset more and really thought about that, I didn't even know what mantras were. Like, I mean, I had no idea. Or like, as far as the visualization, I think I was really good at that, Marcus, even back then. I mean, because I can absolutely close my eyes right now and think about workouts where I would do long runs. I was living in New Jersey at the time on a very hilly area around a lake where I would do these crazy runs where I'd finish, you know, I'd throw 22 mile run up just like crazy, crazy paces, you know, maybe even average like 6:10 for the whole run, 6:15. But I'd finish the last 10 or 12 miles at my marathon pace. And I didn't care how hilly it was. Like I wasn't giving myself 20 seconds break, because some of those hills obviously are downhills. They're not all uphills. You know, you're going up and down. But that's like that prep side of it. But the visualization, I would always put myself out there when I was running. Okay, I'm closing the Chicago Marathon. Here I am. I'm closing and I see the clock. And what does the clock say? Because I think that is such a big piece. And it's super cool that you're asking that question and you're thinking about it for yourself, because the only way you can believe it is it's got to be in every possible way. You have to imagine it happening. You got to visualize it happening. You got to write it down. You got to do all this stuff. But then when you're out there doing the work, you got to be like seeing it too. Like I'm seeing it actually come to fruition. So wherever you're taking that next big swing for yourself or all your runners and listeners that are in there, that's how you have to be visualizing it. Are you trying to break 4 hours? Are you trying to get a BQ? Whatever it is, you got to be thinking of it in that context for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know if this ties into what you're saying, but you tell me if I'm wrong, but especially with, I've got a time goal that I'm looking for, and I don't want to make it seem like that's the only thing I think about, but I see the time and, you know, just that race daily, you know, written down. And on the days that, you know, you're not feeling so great, you know, you've got that part of your brain that goes, oh, I'm tired, I want to run. And then it flips to, well, you know, you're making yourself better for this race. This is what's required. It's almost like your future self telling you, your current self, this is what's required. And I don't know, sometimes find it easier some days to switch, but sometimes it takes a little bit longer.
Of course. I mean, every one of us struggles with the mental component that a hard training cycle presents to us.
Yeah.
You know, you got the young one at home that's having a rough day and is not feeding, or, you know, you got a work colleague who's pissing you off and, you know, pushing your buttons, or, you know, you didn't get enough sleep, whatever the myriad of reasons that come up that present that challenge that day. And, you know, people always think it's the tempo run or the long run. No, man, sometimes it's the recovery day. Sometimes it's the easy day, or we're thinking, let's get something back, because I didn't do as well on my tempo run or my long run. And I think one thing I try to impart all the time to people, you can only go forward. You can never fix the workout that you didn't nail. You can never fix the long run that you weren't able to execute at the paces you want. Never. You can't do it. So there's no undo button. There's no TiVo button. You can't go back and hit the 30-second rewind. You have to be able to just say, that workout is behind Marcus. The workout's behind Ron. I'm on to the next day. And if that next day's recovery, that doesn't mean you run it 20 or 30 seconds faster because you had a shitty workout the workout before and you want to make yourself feel better in that day. You're far better off to run ridiculously slow, ridiculously easy, and just allow yourself the grace to just say, that one's gone. This is my easy day. Let my body recharge. Let my mind recharge. And I'll be ready for the next hard one, or more ready. And I think that's a big mistake a lot of us make in a training cycle. And I know I've certainly made them more in my youth, not nearly as much anymore, because I've just learned that one really invaluable lesson that, you know, what's behind us is truly behind us. You can't make it up. And I think one of the most awesome things about doing a podcast, and I know you appreciate this as much, as you get to share these amazing conversations. You're learning from Olympians, you're learning from ultra runners. For me, in my case, I've talked to Ironman triathletes as well. So we're talking to so many different athletes from all different age groups and all different experiences and all different speeds. You know, one thing I've learned is some of the people who've run the most amazing times and made the Olympic trials and done all these things have come off cycles that did not go well. Or they were injured, built, you know, coming into it, but they had a great cycle the month, you know, the ones leading up to it, the couple leading into that particular one. And they were able to just kind of take the pressure off themselves a little bit and not be so, oh my God, I have to do this, you know, and all of a sudden the result actually came because they weren't maybe expecting it. They took some pressure off themselves and it almost like, they allowed their body to do what it was like truly capable of without the mind getting in the way.
That's a, you know, an amazing place to get to, you know, and some people might think it's only for, you know, a special few, but I don't believe that's the case. And it kind of goes back to what you're saying about just how to view setbacks, and something that I've been thinking about more recently. And it's so true what you say. If you're running or training, you're going to deal with a lot of setbacks. As much as I, you know, talk about boxing, all that kind of stuff, there's lots of setbacks that you go through in training. It's not like a perfect, you know, cycle, you know, so it's almost like dealing with that imposter, really. You've got dealing with the perspective of a setback, and then you look at the other side where some people get too happy about a workout going well. You're just like, okay, cool, it's happened, done, you've got to forget it, move on. Because it seems like this, you know, there was the weeks move on towards like a marathon. You know, you have to keep, it's like a train that's just keep on moving. You go to the next station, you put it up to the next station, you can't look back.
Yes. That's a great analogy. I have a guest pod that didn't publish yet. She had amazing result. And the way it works in our country in the US, Marcus, for the Olympic trials, your number, you know, for the men and the women was based on your seed, right? Amongst the men or the women. So if your number was 100, you were 100th seeded. If your number was 50, you were 50th seeded. And she like outperformed her seed number by like double or more. So, I mean, she totally blitzed her performance. And, you know, just speaking as an example, she didn't have a good training cycle. She was only able to get one 20-mile run done. There were just things going on, and she was battling some health stuff. She happens to be a physical therapist, so she knows a lot about the body and stuff. And she just had to choose to make some choices in the calls with her coach of just, you know, kind of like letting it flow. And, you know, she talked to me about herself in that pod, and it just really connected with me. And I know I've been there too, when we all feel that, like, I didn't nail my last tempo, so now I'm going to push harder on my long run. And if your paces for that long run are 6:12, no, let's make them 6:05, right? Or if somebody else is listening, maybe theirs are 7:30, or maybe they're 8:15, or they're even 9 minutes. Whatever the number is, it doesn't matter. The point is, we can all take a needle and slide the needle left or right of center. And the big, you know, aha moment for her was, hey, she didn't have all those hard 20 milers that she'd normally have in a cycle. She didn't get to do all of those other things that she normally does that tells her fitness is where it needs to be. But she just said, I'm going to roll with it. It's okay. And she still had an amazing day in Atlanta, and like way outperformed, you know, like her seed number on race day on a tough course that was super windy. So it is definitely just something to think about for everybody out there. I'm not saying that I don't get pissed off when I blow a workout in a cycle. Of course I do. You know, I get down as much as anybody else out there. But I've learned through 30 years of just saying, all right, now it's gone, and it's in the past, okay? And again, tomorrow, that next day, is almost always going to be a recovery day. The recovery day is, let it be what it's supposed to be. Don't run 20 or 30 seconds faster a mile. That's not going to gain you anything. Just allow yourself to just chill, and then continue looking forward, as you said. And then when race day comes, you might surprise yourself.
I love that story, because it's got so much resonance, and there's so much power from being able to do that. Because I had a similar experience in Berlin when I ran it. I had some health things happening, and my training cycle was way off. I mean, I had no business running the time that I finished in. But you kind of get to the point of accepting. I know it sounds all Goggins-ish, and some people are like, oh, you're going down a Goggins line, but it's kind of like what he says. It's just like, sometimes you just got to face the truth of what it is, and you think, what can I control? What can't I control? And I was just like, look, this has happened. I can't do anything about it, but I know that I've got all the training from the years before, and I've got this mindset, and I know that I'm going to give it my best, and that's all I need.
Absolutely. And I do remember us talking about your Berlin, and I specifically remember, you're going to be shocked by this one, but your coach gave you a time that was like 10 or 15 minutes slower than what you ran that day. Cause it was just a great conversation, and I remember it. And it's one of the reasons that I brought it up too, cause it's something that you and I had actually talked about on the show previously. So for everybody out there that's struggling in a cycle, or maybe they're going through whatever the issue is, they're injured, they're in a boot. I feel you, man. It's been almost 4 months for me. So I know, you know, what that can do to your psyche, but you gotta just be ready when you can be ready, right? Like, you can't run 10 workouts to make up for one bad one, or you can't add 5 more long runs in because one didn't go as well. Trust me, this process takes so many years. And, you know, I was running more marathons per year in my mid-30s than most people were. I was doing like 3 or 4, but that was considered extreme. Like, most of my friends ran one marathon a year back then. They ran New York, or they ran Boston, or maybe they ran New York and Boston, but that just, people thought that was just weird. Now, I didn't think it was weird at all. I like long distance. I like marathons. I like doing 20 milers. I enjoyed longer distance. I felt like that's where I did my best. And it's true. Like, somewhere out there, you're going to figure out what you're best at. And guess what? Don't follow the damn herd. If you don't love the marathon, find out what you do love. Maybe you love the half marathon. Maybe that's your best distance. Maybe that's really where you're going to excel. Maybe it's 10K. Maybe it's the mile. Maybe it's track or cross country, or maybe it's flat out trail running, just being out in nature. But you know what? You got to do this for yourself, man. You're not doing it for your husband, for your wife, your girlfriend, your friends in a running club, or anything else. If you don't understand what you're doing this for and why you love it or what you love about it, then you're never going to perform at your potential and do your best. So I think that's a super important lesson to share too, because don't follow the herd. If you're not into marathons, don't do them. Find something else to do. You know, there's plenty of things to do.
I think that's such an important point, and it's something that you probably see in, you know, running clubs or on social media where, you know, we've got goals, say, for example, a Good for Age for London or the Boston Qualifier, and you hear people going, I want to go for this goal, I want to go for it. And you're thinking, okay, that's cool, but that can't be your primary focus, because, you know, when times do get challenging, which they will, and it's a time that we're all not going to want to get out the door, we're all going to have that time when we're looking at our sneakers, trainers, and giving that long stare before we head out the door. You know, it's not really times that we enjoy it. So I think like those external things are cool, but they can't be the primary focus. And I think sometimes I kind of get sad when I see people making it their primary focus, because that's not what running's about. That's not why we run. We run because it makes us feel good. You know, there's a connection with ourselves and nature, you know. Oh, and I don't want to speak for everyone, but I can only speak for myself. I run because I enjoy it. And that's primarily the reason I do it. If races were taken away, God forbid, I still would run.
Yes, of course. But maybe others wouldn't. Yeah. And I know you're not presuming to know why anyone else loves it or does it any more than I would. But that's why I throw those other things out. It sounds, you know, counter to my own philosophy, but so what? I mean, what motivates me and gets me out of bed isn't what's going to motivate you or anyone else who listens to your show or my show. And you know, this theme of everyone running a lot of marathons close together, you know, it sounds crazy for me to even be questioning that when I did all six in the 1 year, but I'm in a different place in my life. I'm 58 years old. I've been running for 30 years, you know, for one, I can get into the races. I can qualify. So I don't have to raise like $10,000 per race charity and, you know, literally go broke to, you know, get over to these races. Right. And I have a work schedule where I can actually take the time and, you know, make something like that happen. And more importantly, I've been doing long distance running for a long time. My body's held up. So I came through that incredibly healthy. I worry a little bit about some of these people when I see all these posts, I'm doing four, you know, in 4 weeks, or I'm doing 4 or 5, like, okay, I mean, are you trained for this? I mean, are you prepared for this? Like, you're signed up. Like, it sounds like a great idea. And it sounds like you're super excited to tell all your friends, but I'm sorry. What have you done that's prepared you to run 5 marathons in 5 weeks or 4 marathons in 5 weeks? Because I got to tell you, if you're not prepared and you aren't really trained for that and your body isn't ready for it, it's a prescription for injury. So I hope that, you know, by me sharing what I've done, you know, it's hard to talk about it without sounding like, okay, I did this, or you know, I'm cool, or I'm stronger than somebody else. No, I mean, I've been doing this for 30 years. My body's adapted to it. And doing long runs for me, that's not much longer than my long run to run 26 miles. So it's, you know, like for me, it was really not that much of a stretch for me. And it gives me the opportunity to come and hang out with cool friends like you when I go to London, or see my other friends in Tokyo or Berlin. And I mean, it was the experience of a lifetime. I wouldn't trade 2018 for anything. And then especially when you throw 2019 as the pandemic on the back of it, where, you know, we didn't even get to, you know, do anything or, you know, do anything fun or, you know, whatever. So it's just been, it's been crazy times for sure. I just think people got to figure out, what are they doing it for? And, you know, are they training to ensure they're setting themselves up for success? Whether that's on their own, following some, you know, runner's world training guide, or hiring a terrific coach like you have, or, you know, working with a small group, whatever it is, just make sure you're setting yourself up for success and you're chasing the goals that matter to you.
Absolutely. I think we could definitely go down a rabbit hole there, but I think we're going to I just want to pause that. And because we'll go back to something you said a bit earlier, we spoke about, obviously you're a podcaster yourself, and you spoke about the example of the guests and the kind of relating it kind of to what I did in Berlin. But putting that sort of story to one side, obviously is related to kind of what my experience. Are there any other experiences or conversations that you've had with people on your show that have made you think, set back afterwards and think, wow, like, you know, you have to kind of deeply digest it?
I think that is the gift of all gifts. Starting the show, the diversity of guests I have, and just to share with people, they're not fast people per se. You know, I'm not talking to just elite people by any stretch of the imagination. I'm talking to mid-pack runners, or even maybe even some people might consider back of the pack runners. It just, is there something interesting in their story? Have they overcome a health issue, a life issue? Do I know them through a connection or find something about their story compelling or interesting? But I mean, I think I learned something from every guest I talk to for sure. And, you know, like, what are their motivations? You know, who are their mentors in life? Who influenced them? You know, just what principles do they take, you know, from their running life? You know, their habits, you know, what they apply to running to be successful, or ultra running or triathlon, whatever the sport is, whatever the endeavor is. Like, what principles are they using there to get out of bed, to get the work done? Or maybe they train at night. You know, maybe they work a night shift and run in the morning. Like, we all have these crazy different schedules, and we have to fit it all in, you know, with our family life. So I think with every episode that I've recorded, I've learned something, and I look forward to that. I never know what it's going to be. You know, sometimes it just like hits me right between the eyes, and other times it might be after I listen to the episode a second time, I'll just be like, wow, man, that was really something. I didn't even think about that, you know, in that moment, but it was. And, you know, for example, like I said, with Libby Bigelow, the guest that I had on, you know, talking about her cycle, and, you know, she recognized it after. It's very easy to look back on things than it is to, in the moment, you know, recognize it. But, you know, all these other cycles where she nailed it, like you had, like you talked about your Berlin cycle not being there, you know, she nailed it and nailed her long runs and nailed her tempo runs and all this stuff. She didn't. And she came to Atlanta just feeling relaxed. And by the way, for people who were in this, you know, world where, you know, we want to fly, we want to stay in the nicest hotel, we want to do all this stuff. She and her husband drove 17 hours from like Minnesota, where they live, to Atlanta. They drove 17 hours in their car to get down to Atlanta. Like, her mom and dad were there, like other family members were there. And, you know, like, just think about that. Like, I mean, I would never do that. And I don't consider myself soft at all, but I would never think like, okay, this is the prescription for success. But that's what her and her husband love. They like road trips. They're outdoor people. And that's what they did. And you know what? She had an amazing day. So I learned a bunch of things from her that day. You know, that, like, I think, you know, I want to get to the city where I'm running early, you know, adapt to the time zone. I want to travel the best way I can. I want to stay in the nicest hotel. And, you know, here she is, her and her husband are driving 17 hours, you know, to a hotel to run in the Olympic trials. And she had an amazing race. So you never know what kind of lesson you'll learn.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's even sometimes it's things that they say, and sometimes it's the things they do. And I was asking that question, I felt a little bit bad because I don't want you to sort of pick anyone out on the spot, because then all the other guests are going to be like, yeah, what about me, Ron? So I don't want to be like that. But I just think of, like, particular recent, actually, I'm just thinking of some guests that I've had on, and it's just even the way that they conduct themselves, about the way they manage their time. They're precious, they're mindful of their time. And it's the little things like that, you go, ah, cool. That's like a real cool insight into the way that you work and how you process things. And that kind of rubs off on me, because I feel like I'm learning so much from each person I speak to. So sometimes not just the things they say, it's just the way they behave.
Yeah. I mean, absolutely. We all think that we can't handle any more stuff on our side of the fence or on our side of the plate. And then, like you said, you talk to some of these amazing moms or dads, you know, depending on, you know, what age of life they are and what roles they have. But I tend to talk to more moms on my show. And, you know, I've had a recent guest also who went from 307 to 245. And she was having postpartum depression, anxiety when her first baby was born, and living on a military base in Germany. And, you know, you're far away from home. I mean, there's no manual for this stuff. You know, we don't know how life is going to throw us a curveball, and how are we going to handle it, and what are we going to do? And she grew up in a military family. Her dad was actually the marathon coach at West Point, which is where the Army, you know, gets their schooling. And that's where, Their education takes place, Naval Academies in Annapolis, Maryland. So, you know, her dad was a big runner, her brother's a big runner, but here she is on this base with her pilot husband, and she's just not feeling normal. She's not feeling like herself. And, you know, she meets this, you know, stroller warrior group, a bunch of moms who just, you know, get out with their strollers and baby strollers and kind of bond together to kind of have some social time, some connection together. And, you know, she was struggling so mightily, like she'd run around the block and hear her baby around the block screaming and then just come right back home. Just could not feel like comfortable, wasn't okay with it, and meets these other moms, connects with them, runs a 7-mile race, is like nursing her baby at the starting line, at the finish line, runs the race, and then just starts this whole cycle of like coming back to who she is. And running centers her. It makes her be the best version of herself. And her husband recognized it, and these other moms recognized it. And, you know, she just goes through this epic transition and, you know, goes from, like I said, from 307 and runs 245. Just amazing. And like a McCurdy marathon, which is, it's, McCurdy's a big coach in the US, James McCurdy. So he's got a pretty big stable of athletes he's coaching, but it's not like it was, you know, a real marathon. It's his marathon. Like, he's putting it on for like his athletes, if you will. So I think, I don't know, maybe like 80 runners ran in the race, and most of them were his athletes that he coached. I'm sure there were some other people like locally that ran in it, but I mean, what a performance, you know? So you want to talk about learning a lesson, like, you know, like, hey, you know, she needed help to get herself centered again. And she connected with these other moms, and she has this like huge transition and gets back to running and just absolutely kills it. So there's just so much. We can all learn so much from each other, and especially by sharing. So great question. Obviously, great questions you always ask. There's always something to learn for somebody, and sharing it is, we all grow, you know, from the lessons learned together.
I know this might seem like a really simple question, but just going back to the guest type, like, although you haven't got a guest type, you did sort of say specifically in probably recent episodes, you're sort of looking at, you know, the mum, basically, the, do you know what I mean, that sort of had to, you know, I've just got quite interested in why that particular type of person interests you to speak to at this particular moment.
Well, for me, you know, my dad, God rest his soul, isn't with us anymore, with my family, but my mom raised my two brothers and I, so the three of us, and she's still with me. She'll be 89 September 4th, God bless her, strong as can be, feisty little Irish lady, awesome woman, and just strong women, being raised by an incredibly strong woman, strongest woman I've ever known and met. Always been my role model, always been my source of strength when I struggle, when I hit difficult times, wherever I am, wherever I'm facing, whatever I go through, I will always think of my mom forever, long after she's gone. So for sure, coming across women that are doing something, in the running, triathlon, ultra space will always catch my attention, but moms will always have like a soft spot for me. Particularly ones who are juggling a lot and doing things like my mom did. That's just something that resonates with me, and I feel it's like really powerful, and it's something that's close to me and it matters to me. So I feel like the conversations I'm going to have with those people are going to be a little more special. And also it's a way to like kind of pay a little homage to my mom. So that's why it's important to me.
No, that really makes a lot of sense. And yeah, thank you for sharing that. And yeah, shout out to all the strong mums out there. So I think, yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. And so I was just, yes, thinking about my own experience with my own parents, really. So yeah, that kind of makes a lot of sense when you kind of have that frame of reference growing up, really. Yeah, so thank you for sharing that. And I'm just sort of thinking, obviously, you know, podcasting myself, like I said, Run Chats with Ron, Runs NYC, you know, check it out. And, you know, you've obviously asked, you know, a lot of people questions, but obviously now I'm asking you the questions. If you were interviewing yourself, what would you ask yourself on a podcast?
Oh my goodness. Okay, dude, you're off your rocker. Everybody knows it. Like, how are you still doing this after all this time? Oh gosh. I don't even know. I don't know, Marcus. I guess, let's see if I'm going to be really fair, cause it is a great question. I think personally, if somebody were watching me closely, and seeing, you know, the 6-star journey and doing them all in 1 year and, you know, being at this for a really long time, I would notice, you know, that I've shifted my focus almost 100% to, you know, kind of doing community service, fundraising, focusing on my running for others and trying to bring attention to causes and raise money. So I'd want to know more about that. Like, why, how did that come about? Why is it important? And is that like relatable to somebody else or interesting to somebody else? Maybe it's not. You know, we're all going through a different journey in life and we're all at a different phase in our lives. So what might be super interesting or motivating to you or me might be something that somebody's like, aha, whatever, you know, that's not for me.
I'm just thinking back to that movie, Groundhog Day. And you know, when you get to the point of like, and I can drink whatever I want, I can smoke whatever I want. And he kind of realizes actually it's not about him. It's about impacting the lives of other people and noticing them. It's kind of similar to what you said there. Like, you can go and do all these amazing things, get your PR in the marathons, go and travel, do these kind of things. But the service part is so important. And giving to other people, I think that's more fulfilling. And like you said, you've done things in terms of the start of the pandemic, you've raised a lot of money, not just for, you know, Tommy and his family, but, you know, for other things, you know, during the pandemic as well. So I'm just quite curious to sort of think, when did that sort of switch happen? And like you said, why is it so important for you?
Well, I think it is incredibly important. And you're right. I'm at a different phase in my life than probably a lot of your listeners that might be 20s, 30s, or even 40s. So, you know, being at 60, you know, you've done a lot of things that maybe you want to do in your life. And you've been blessed to be able to be in these races, to run the 100th Boston and now to run the 125th. It's pretty amazing. There can't be that many people that are still, you know, doing it, you know, 25 years later. So that's a huge blessing. But I think for me, the shift, I mean, I've always enjoyed running for a cause and fundraising, running for American Cancer Society, for example, because my mom's had lymphoma for 30 years. So raising money for cancer and important causes has always mattered to me. But when the pandemic truly hit, and I'm sure you remember this because London was obviously very hard hit too, but New York was just, I mean, it was like a war zone. I've never seen, it was like a movie. It wasn't real. You've been here multiple times. You've run around the streets of New York. You've run around the boroughs. And to run through Times Square at any time during the day or night and not literally see another human being, like literally no cars. I'm running through Times Square in the day or night with no cars, being able to be in the middle of the road up 42nd Street. It just changes you. It changes you and it really makes you reflect on your life. And working in healthcare, Marcus, you know, I'm not a doctor or a physician. I work in the technology side of the business, but I've got teams of people that work for me and my business that are on site at the hospitals. And I know many doctors and I know many nurses and I know, you know, people involved it from the diagnostic side, every side of medicine and healthcare. I know people closely. They either work for me or they're business colleagues of mine. And when the pandemic took hold and it was at its height, I just couldn't sleep. I was struggling mightily. I couldn't sleep. I was disconnected from my son, from my mom, from my brothers, and from all of the social running, which you understand about me very well. Like, that is a fabric of my life, is getting together for those shakeouts and hanging out with people and just goofing off and being silly and then all going to Starbucks for coffee like we did in London. And I missed it all so much and I knew it wasn't safe. And I just needed to figure out some way, with healthcare being impacted so dramatically, like, what could I do? And I just came up with the idea that I was going to run a marathon a week and I was going to raise money and, you know, deliver meals, you know, to frontline healthcare workers. And I knew that I had been sending meals from the beginning of the pandemic. So I was sending like trays of bagels and sending pizzas at lunch, and it made me feel good, but it wasn't sustainable. And I knew I couldn't do it for a really long period of time, you know, maybe for a few months at best. And also, I didn't feel like I was doing anything other than paying for those meals. Whereas by putting the skin in the game and going out there and running a marathon a week alone, you know, with no one. A lot of those runs I had a buff on or a mask on as well. So it was not, it wasn't easy. And 10 in 10 weeks was remarkably demanding physically. But I got back, you know, I don't know what percentage, like a thousandfold over whatever the physical demand was on my body and how tough it was mentally to consider like, okay, I'm going to do this again 5 days from now or 6 days from now. Cause they weren't all 7 days apart. Some were 5 days apart, 4 days apart, 6 days apart. It just depended on how scheduling and life went. So I will never forget the impact that I got back from the people that I was giving those meals to, sending those meals to, dropping those meals off for. They sang to me, they sent me cards. It just made me feel like $1 million. And it changed me, you know, it just changed me forever. And no doubt, you know, coming out of that, you know, reading about Tommy Rives' situation and reading Steph's amazing posts and writing about, you know, the suffering he was enduring and what he was going through and just seeing all those tubes in his body, this incredible athlete and human, I just felt like I had to do something there too. So those were like two very big, you know, different specific things that moved me, you know, to this other kind of side of my running. And, you know, I just, it made all the difference for me. And doesn't mean it would for anybody else, but for me, it made a difference and it made me feel like I was doing something to help and contribute in a time when it was hard, you know, hard to do something else.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm just sort of thinking in terms of that aspect of being in service and just seeing beyond yourself and community. I mean, has that impacted your podcast in terms of the questions that you ask and just the insights that you may be indirectly looking for?
I mean, I think it affects all areas of your life because I ask every single guest on my show about community service now. I ask them what they're involved in, whether it was in their youth or older, or are they thinking about? Because I would never want to make somebody feel like inadequate or that they're not doing something they should be doing. Because I think, my gosh, in your 20s or 30s, I don't think it's would be just a natural inclination automatically. You might be community service minded as a person. You might be incredibly well-mannered, give up your seat, open doors, hold doors, you know, be really polite as a human and always be thinking of other people around you. But you might not be in a position where you'd have the ability to fundraise and come up with money or help, you know, people raise money for groups. And I think that's one of the blessings too, is that, you know, you build a little bit bigger following, you have a podcast, you have an audience, you have a channel, you have a platform. And for me, that's important to me, using that channel to kind of spread that message and talk about it with my guests, get them thinking about it. If maybe they haven't done some of those things yet, maybe they'll think about doing it themselves. And, you know, I think that's a conversation that is just really powerful. Because I'm talking to people of a lot of different age groups. And, you know, for the younger people I'm talking to, if I can help get them thinking along those lines, and it can be something, it's got to be the same way mantras have to be personal to you. It's got to be something that's important to you. Healthcare mattered to me. Like, that's the business that I'm in. And seeing the impact it had on them as doctors, nurses, physicians, the emotional distress, the PTSD it was causing, the depression, the anxiety, I just wanted to help them. I wanted to make them feel better. And it was just something that I chose to do that really, I just feel good about it. And I know that the people that I connected with at those hospitals and health systems were so appreciative of it. And I know, you know, I've gotten to know Rives, you know, just through messaging, obviously. You know, it's not like I've seen him or anything or met him. You know, he's out in Flagstaff, Arizona, but gotten to know him and Jacob and messaged with him quite a lot since doing the run. And, you know, I just think we can all do something. It doesn't have to be to run 10 marathons in 10 weeks. It doesn't have to be to run 60 miles on your 60th birthday. We can all do something in our community, you know, that can help, you know, other people. And I think as runners, it's incumbent upon us to try to look to do more. We all help each other with our training and advice and things, But there's definitely more that we can do. And, you know, I'm open to anybody reaching out to me, you know, on from your show, from my show, from anywhere, Instagram, Facebook, anywhere. They got any big ideas, they have something they want to try to bring to life, I mean, hit me up, man. Hit you up. You know, I'm down. I'm open to anything that could help impact somebody. Because we all think you got to move this huge needle, right? You got to do all this stuff. No, you know what? If you can help one person, if you can open one person's mind or change one person's day by doing something good that's focused on someone else other than yourself, then that's, you're winning. You're making a difference.
Absolutely. And I think sometimes it also comes down to, sometimes you may help someone, but you'll never know you've helped them and still been able to go forward and still do that thing to help other people without getting that validation back.
Absolutely. As we all know, you shouldn't need it. That should never be your motivation. Yeah. It is nice, but even just think about the simplest act. If you give up your seat on the subway, if you hold the door, if you carry somebody's groceries out to their car, when you were a kid, when you were 8 years old, man, I just never forget how good it would make me feel. You know, I didn't carry somebody's bags out to their car to get a tip, 25 cents or a dollar. You know, I just did it because my mom raised me that way. And, you know, like if somebody said, oh, you're such a nice boy or thanks a lot, it always felt good. And you know what? When you do something for others, you'll always feel good. I mean, that's really the message. That's what it always comes down to. You'll feel good about yourself. And you know what? You helped somebody else.
Absolutely. I almost feel it's slightly criminal that we've not spoken about your running, because there's a lot we could speak about. And I think it kind of ties into what you just said there about Tommy. You actually ran 60 miles for your 60th to help raise money. And it's just like, I was saying to Jacob, I was like, what's Ronald going to do when he gets to 100? He's like, there's 100 mile races out there. So we're not putting it against you.
I appreciated the shout out for sure, man. And it was much, much appreciated. And the beauty of the Instagram world and our world with podcasting is I think no less than 10 people told me about it. So I loved it. You know, great to come from you and Jacob. I think it was even more fun that other people were like, oh yeah, Marcus gave you a shout out, or Jacob gave you a shout out on the show. You got to listen. So that was wonderful. Of all the things I've done in athletics and sports, I don't think I've ever done anything harder or anything that will stay with me longer, because that day, January 29th, which was my birthday, was the coldest day of our winter. It was about 10 degrees air temperature, and it was well below zero wind chill. And where I ran, Marcus, where I live, is right on the water. And the route that I chose is that's where I run. I mean, I'm not going to change where I run. I'm going to run on the water. There were 25 to 35 mile an hour wind gusts the whole day. Not every single moment the way it kind of was in Boston, but the wind was blowing relentlessly and it was just crazy. I look back on the pictures now and I've got tons of pictures I took, you know, myself, you know, with my phone and my GoPro. And I had two people lucky enough to join me and spend some miles with me out there who took some pictures as well. There's not a single person in any of the photographs, nowhere. There's no one out walking their dog. There's just no one out there at all until it became nighttime in New York City. Because New York City, there's always someone outside. You know, you're going to see some people. But it just showed you how incredibly ridiculous the conditions were that day. And all of my friends were like, dude, what are you doing? Just switch the day, just move it a couple of weeks or move it a week, wait for a better day. And I was just like, no, this is my birthday. This is the day I said I was going to do it. I got to do it. I mean, it's part of the whole thing. So that was something I'll never forget. And, you know, I'd taken a hard fall 5 days before, like a crazy hard fall in a dark area where I just hit my knee and smashed it onto like a piece of concrete, and it was swollen, you know, immediately, and I was bleeding all over. And in true, you know, crazy psycho fashion, I continued to run like 13 more miles on it. And it was so cold that night too. I think sometimes the cold just numbs you so much that you can't even feel stuff. I got back from that run and it was my third straight 100-mile week, and I was on pace to do 500 miles. I was trying to beat Dez's record for Dez-tober. Because I thought it would help me with fundraising for Tommy. So I wanted to get to 500 miles. I was on pace to do 500 miles in January and before the fall. And then I had to take 5 days off because I basically was like hobbling. I mean, no question. I was having a hard time walking my dog. And then the morning came, which was Friday. And, you know, I said, this was the day. I got to see what's up. You know, I didn't know. I mean, I was certainly not limping anymore, but I didn't know how I was going to be to run. It's like I was going on a 10-mile run. It's a 60-mile run, you know, with no course and nobody out there. So I really didn't know. I didn't know what was going to happen. I didn't know if I was going to make it, you know, a block, a mile, 2 miles or whatever. And it was, like I said, an experience of a lifetime, because it's not a ultra or a marathon where there's other runners that you can just kind of work off of and lean on. And, you know, it was me. I had no Goggins in my head. I had no music on. I had no podcast playing. It was just me and reflection. And although it was a frigid day and a crazy cold, windy day, it was a beautiful day. The sun was out. And I just try to think about all the people in my life that mattered along the way. And, you know, obviously I thought a lot about Rives and his family and how I had to finish this thing, because how could I really ask people to donate their money to give to Tommy's family if I wasn't going to finish the job? So believe me, man, there was a lot of pressure on me, and it was all there by myself. And I don't really think people were sitting around going, oh, who cares whether this guy runs 60 miles or not on his 60th birthday. But to finish it, you know, and run on a stress fracture, I didn't find that out until after it was over. You know, that was probably one of the coolest, craziest, hardest things I've ever done.
Absolutely. Like you said, you know, you're out there by yourself. You know, the weather is what it is. And it's almost like sometimes you have those training runs where you stop and you pause, and you just like, you look around, you just realize it's just you. Connected to the earth, you think, why the hell am I out here? What am I doing this for? No one will know if I stop now to this, but you're like, you know, I've got to keep going.
Oh, I mean, dude, trust me. There, my good friend Toddy, who lives in the building, she's from South America. She was supposed to start with me, but she was so cold in the morning and she wasn't feeling great. She's like, you know, would it be okay if, you know, you ran out to where you're doing your out and back, and then you swing back by the building, because we live, there's four buildings here. And I was like, yeah, don't worry about it, man. You know me, I don't like getting up early. If it wasn't for this run, I wouldn't be getting up this early. And she's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, it's no big deal. So like, in a way, I thought she was going to run with me. And I got to, dude, I was like, the first couple steps, I could already feel my knee. And I was just like, okay, this isn't good. I'm like, yeah, a block away from my building and my knee's already hurting. And I don't know, maybe it was just better that no one was there. When I say no one, I don't just mean her. No one, like no one, not a dog walker, not a human being. And I am blessed to live in a remarkably gorgeous area to run along the waterfront. I mean, you're looking at Lower Manhattan, you're looking at spectacular landscape and buildings and water and the sun. And it was a gorgeous morning. And although it was freezing cold beyond belief, you're absolutely right, there's no one in sight. I'm not a meditator. You know, I'm not the kind of person, I don't do yoga, I don't meditate. That run was a meditation, man. It was just, it was all of, you know, I talked about not having the mental game, you know, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
I have the mental game now. And, you know, Goggins, I listened to the audiobook like literally every day for 2 weeks leading up to it. And even though I've listened to it like countless times before and read it countless times, it was just literally preparing myself for whatever was going to come my way. And I, you know, I did shout him out, and I shouted out Adam Skolnick, because Adam, you know, was the ghostwriter, you know, helped him write it. And, you know, obviously reads the audio together. That was their experience. And, you know, I think he definitely wrote back on my post, which was kind of cool. Goggins himself and Adam. So that was kind of neat.
That is amazing. I'll have to, what did they say to you?
It might have been just stay hard, you know, standard Goggins, you know, but you know what? It didn't matter. It was him. It was his account. And I was just like, damn, it's Goggins.
Yeah, that's amazing.
You know how much he means to guys like us. I mean, and other people, you know, like for me, I know it may sound cliche. It might sound ridiculous or unbelievable. I would not have made it through that run it wasn't just all the miles. It wasn't all my training. It wasn't all the years building up to it. It was the mental piece of hearing all those episodes that he'd gone through. And he's preparing you, me, and everyone else listening for how you can get through it, how you could find that other 20%, how you can figure out a way to duct tape yourself in Death Valley. And every one of those thoughts came into my mind with no music on, no radio on, no audiobook playing, no soundtrack playing. There's a lot going through your ears, man, over 11 and a half hours, brother. Trust me, a lot. But I know that I give him, you know, credit. Because we need the mental piece is huge, man. We can't make it through these crazy hard challenges in life without having the mental game.
Do you know what? Listening to what you just said there, and I don't want to take away from what you said because it's incredible, but I have a similar type of thing where I listen to the David Goggins audiobook. I've listened to quite a bit, especially for like in training runs or, you know, if you're building up to something, because it, although sometimes people might look at David Goggins and think, oh, you know, he's just some sort of outlier. He's just telling you to kind of beast mode and carry the boats and stay hard and all that kind of stuff. It's not. When I listen to it, it's basically giving a description of his life, but then he's also reminding you that actually you have a lot in you. You don't have to go beast mode, but you know, when you ask yourself the honest questions, there's so much in you. And I think it's just like a good reminder to actually remember what you have. That's what I take from listening to his audiobooks, not about him, but what I have, if that makes any sense.
It makes total sense. And like I said, I tapped into that on such a deeper level.
Yeah.
And once I think I got, I don't even think I was a mile past where I really felt my knee and it was already like starting to throb a little bit. And I think the blessing for me was the fact that literally no one was out there and it was so frozen cold. I think I just got into this deep freeze mode where you really couldn't feel it anymore. I know my mechanics were good. Because there's no way I could have run that fast for that length of time. And sure, I took Facebook Live breaks to update people on where I was and, you know, hopefully to help build, you know, fundraising, because that was the goal. And, you know, there was no way for people to track me. It wasn't like a race where they could tell how far along I was. So the only way they knew where I was or what I was doing is when I would pop on Facebook Live and they'd be like, they would hear the wind blowing like 40 miles an hour and the Statue of Liberty was over my shoulder. And it was just crazy, dude. Like I can go back on there and look at that video and I'm like, wow. Like my face is red as a tomato. Like, I mean, it is literally as red as a tomato. And I had like, one of the, I don't even know what those things are called, the baklavas or whatever those face guard things are that like, you know, only your eyes are showing, but it didn't matter. It just didn't matter. My water, my, my pack with the water frozen solid, solid frozen. I mean, like harder than ice cubes. Like you couldn't even get anything out of there. Just things that you just could never anticipate, could never expect, happening. And that's why, like, of course, you know, I ended up running 432 miles in January, but that was only in 24 days of running, Marcus. So it's like 18 miles per day average. So if I didn't fall and hit that, I would have gotten Dez's record. And the reason, you know, Dez, we know she's a genius and she's amazing and she crushes the internet and Instagram. Like I knew if I could do that, I would have found a way to get Dez to know. Like, I tagged her and stuff, but somebody would have reached out for me on my behalf and told her I ran 500 miles. And just, I was just trying to get Dez to donate something from Boston, something significant to her, you know, for ribs that I could auction off. Cause we all know what an amazing human Dez is. And, you know, that was my goal. But obviously I didn't hit that when I had to take the 5 days off, but Lord knows if I didn't take those 5 days off, there's no chance in hell I was running. And my sports doctor, like when I went to see him, and he's famous, man, he's done 14 Ironmans, 35 marathons. He's on like local television here and he's literally a celebrity doctor. And, you know, he saw me come into his office and he's like, takes an X-ray. He's like, dude, you ran 60 miles in that day on that weather. It's like, you're fine, man. You're okay. The X-ray is good. I'm like, I don't know. I think something's wrong. He's like, nah, you're all right. I think you're okay. I was like, all right. And, you know, like a day later, he's like, you know, just see if you can try to run. But if you have any pain, we'll come back and we'll do an MRI. And I didn't even make it like, you know, I don't know, 10 steps or something. And I wasn't going to do anything stupid. We came back for the MRI. He gets me on a Zoom call with like his medical team. And he's like, dude, I said three times to my medical staff, are you sure I got the guy's right MRI? Are we looking at the right guy's MRI? Because he's like, people who have this injury come in like in a wheelbarrow. You know, they come in rolled in a wheelchair or they're like hobbling in or they're on crutches. He goes, dude, you're like rolling in all smiling, man. You got your Team Riffs hat on. He goes, I would never have guessed in a million years how bad your injury was. He goes, you have like an acute medial femoral condyle fracture. He goes, it's like one of the worst fractures you could have because I have no idea how you possibly ran 60 miles. You know, so he just, you know, that part of it also made it extra cool because, you know, you don't do something like that, you know, and, you know, we're going back to Goggins again because, you know, he's not taping himself up there with duct tape, you know, to write his book. He's just doing it because he's going to do whatever he has to do to finish that day. Right.
Yeah.
And if that's what's going to help him finish, or I think my favorite stories are when he ran, you know, the 24 hours on the track and he's drinking the Myoplex, you know, it's like the bodybuilder
the
trick, you know, it's like, dude, with the crackers, like, dude, what on earth could you possibly put into your body that would be worse than Myoplex and crackers? Right. And it's like, I'm hearing the story. Now, mind you, I've heard this like so many times. I probably could recite entire chapters of the book, like word for word. And I'm sitting there going, hey man, if he can drink Myoplex and crackers and make it through a 24 hour run. And then, you know, then it goes to Chris Costas, the race director. And he's like, the idea was to run the whole 24 hour. Like, you know, like he didn't do something right. He's like, you know, call me back when you've write me back when you've done that. It's just like, it's just such priceless stuff. And I mean, honestly, I know it might sound crazy, but I tapped into that just in every possible way. And, you know, at some point into the run, I just totally forgot about my knee. I wasn't thinking about my knee. I wasn't feeling my knee. I just was looking out at the sunshine and I was really realizing how lucky I am that I could try to do something this crazy, this nutty, this insane at my age. And that if I could somehow find a way to get 60 miles, I'm going to raise a lot of money for this guy who needs it. Because I got to tell you, back then, Marcus, it wasn't even a question whether he was even going to be alive when I finished that run, you know, by no means. And, you know, you talked to Jacob, you talked to his brother. No, I mean, you saw what the pictures look like. He lost 70 pounds of body weight. I mean, he had more tubes in him, you know, like it just didn't even look real looking at some of those photographs. So I try to channel all that and just say, if I can finish, I can help, you know, just keep going. And, you know, the Lord was with me. People were rooting for me, and you know, I was able to do it. And way cooler than anything else, get to know Rives a little bit after the fact, for sure.
It's just so incredible listening back to that, and no, thank you for sharing that. And yeah, like listening to those Goggins stories and like going back, and even you talk about when you sort of went into the hospital, and like that's me looking at the photos, I'm like, it looks so happy. Like, it doesn't look like it's 60 miles. I've got a stress fracture. I'm like, who is this guy?
Honestly, Greg was out there in the back end. My friend Toddy was there in the front end. And he filmed like the last, I don't know, like quarter mile of me running up the street, like coming across the fake, you know, tape coming through. And my good friend Allie, who's been on my show, one of my dear friends from New Jersey, runner, badass moms, who's been on my show, she's just like, dude, I don't look that good after putting on 3 hours of makeup. She goes, I don't understand. How could you possibly look this good after running 60 miles? And that's the God's truth. There's like no Photoshop. I think that is a fun lesson to share because that is how good you can feel when you're doing something for someone else. Because trust me, dude, I had no idea on God's earth if I was ever going to make it. I mean, I just had no idea. And to be out there in those elements and that crazy weather and to actually finish, it felt better than anything I've ever done. You know, any fast time I've ever run, anything else, it just felt amazing. But you're right, man. When I look back at the pictures, I certainly don't look that good right now. I look like a fat slob right now. I'm like 20 pounds overweight because I mean, I can't run, you know, and even though I can bike, I can only ride so many days a week. You know, I can't, it's not like runners where we can just get out there every day and get our miles in and burn our calories and burn off the crazy, you know, I just can't. So
it's so inspiring and incredible, I think, what you've done. And I think like, I think there's so much I could go into with that, but I'm just mindful of kind of time as well, because obviously this is international. I'm in the UK, you're in, you know, Eastern Standard Time as well. So you're a different part of the day for me. So, but yeah, thank you for sharing that. And I just want to kind of, before we kind of wrap this up, I just want to go back to one thing I always ask all my guests. Can you share, like, if you could give your younger self one piece of advice, what would you say to yourself?
Always a good question. Let's see, what would I say to younger Ron Runs NYC, who wasn't even Ron Runs NYC back then? And you weren't the Marathon Marcus back then either. We don't even have, Instagram or anything. We had fax machines, dude. Maybe I would fax myself a note. Yes, I'd give Page Ron Romano. Here's what I need to tell you. Learn more about mindset. Didn't know anything about that. Learn more about nutrition. Didn't know anything about that. And, you know, I think I enjoyed running back then for sure, but I think I've made so much more about community and sharing the experience with others as I've aged as a runner. And you know me, man, I haven't become 1 ounce less competitive. So it's not like, man, I'll race anyone. I'd race you. I'd race my son. I'd race my mom, man. No one's getting ahead of me if I can beat them in a race, but man, I will hug your ass and I'll buy you a drink and do anything with you when it's over. I wish maybe I had enjoyed that piece a little more. I think I was crazy competitive, as I still am, but I don't think I was as much about sharing and enjoying and trying to make sure others were enjoying the running experience and being so community-minded to try to bring other people into the sport. But maybe that's just something you have to learn as you get older in life. You know, maybe that's just something that just kind of comes about. But yeah, I mean, that's just a great thing that I've come to appreciate so much more and just adds just so much to why we do it.
Yeah, it seems like, although we have a perception of like how things are, but like you said, there's definitely richer with other people.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah, so you can run all the PRs in the world, but if you aren't looking forward to, and you know, I know you're the same way as me. I can close my eyes in Berlin and I'm on Potsdamer Platz and you're walking down the street and we crash into each other. Like, I just remember those moments just like it happened yesterday. I do. And those same moments for you have to happen with other friends of yours from around the world. And, you know, in London, and it's Karen Selby and you and me, and God knows how many cast of characters we had that day, 50, 60 of us stormtrooping into the Starbucks. I think we cleared the place out because we were so damn loud and noisy. But I mean, to me, that's as much of what I remember about that weekend as I remember the race. Yeah. I mean, sure, the race was great. Of course it was great. And it was really awesome. But honestly, that was by far the most fun, you know, with Karen and her husband, Alan, and him filming us, taking pictures and us, you know, laying on the ground and doing stupid shit. You know, it just, that's just what adds like so much texture and depth to it all. So, you know, that's what I would say to everybody, certainly in their youth, man, enjoy it. Doesn't mean that you shouldn't push the living hell out of yourself, man. I can't be any more type A. It's not possible, but enjoy it. It doesn't mean that you can't enjoy it and be that same person, man. Enjoy it. And how you can enjoy it more is by getting more people involved in the sport or meeting more people, connecting with more people, and just sharing your experiences, man.
Absolutely. I think, yeah, that is such a great way to end the conversation. But before we do that, can you share how people can follow you online and tell us about your podcast as well?
Sure, I'd love to. So on Instagram, it's Ron Runs NYC. And my podcast is Run Chats with Ron Runs NYC. It's on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, Stitcher, you know, all the places where anybody would download their podcasts. And I would greatly appreciate anybody subscribing and following me. And I will promise to follow you all back.
Ron, it's always a pleasure talking with you. And I'm looking forward to the day that we can actually get back and run a race together, because also we've done so many races across the world. So it's always a special time.
Absolutely, man. I can't wait to see you in London. And no doubt. So tell your listeners right now. We'll tell my listeners too. We'll plan some sort of fun dual podcast live event or events during London World Age Group Championships race weekend. We'll put some really fun stuff together to get some of your listeners and my listeners and people on to just chat running and have some fun.
Absolutely. Having fun is the key part. So that's definitely going to happen. Ron, thank you for being a guest on a Runner's Life podcast.
Oh, so appreciated. Thanks so much for having me on again, my friend. Look forward to seeing you soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of A Runner's Life. If you found value in this episode and you want to support the show, please share with your community, post on your social media channels, and encourage them to listen and subscribe. If you want to support my work directly, you can become a member on Patreon at www.patreon.com/arunnerslife. If you want to get updates on the podcast or you want to see what I'm up to, you can follow me on Instagram at arunnerslife_podcast and at themarathonmarcus. Your time is valuable, so thank you for spending your time listening to this episode of A Runner's Life podcast.